228958, M41, undesignated feral ice world, segmentum tempestus. Inquisitor Mikhail Dinalt had never been fond of the cold, hailing as he did from a scorched desert world, and as the heavy snow fell, he pulled his cloak tighter about his shoulders and ploughed on through the thick powder underfoot. Behind him, the six figures that made up his cohort followed in his wake, the three humans among them shivering in the sub-zero temperatures, the Xenos and the two gun servitors seemingly oblivious to the adverse conditions.
"We'll freeze to death if we're out here much longer,"
said the tall, muscular male at the rear of the group. He wore several furs over his matching leather jacket and trousers, and snow had settled on the wide brim of his hat. The harsh lines and creases of his face were pale. Frost had formed on the week's growth of stubble on his chin, and his lips were rapidly turning an unhealthy shade of blue.
"I didn't spend all this time hunting for her just to end my days face down in the snow."
Dinalt, as he had conditioned himself to do so over their many years together, tuned out the gunman's moaning, and ignoring him entirely, continued laboriously on. Dinvayo Chow may be one of the finest shots the Inquisitor had ever encountered in almost 2 centuries of service to the Golden Throne, but he was also one of the greatest whingers, too. Dinalt had never seen Chow miss either a shot with his twin bolt pistols or an opportunity to complain about the latest injustice being perpetrated upon him.
"All the intelligence points to this being the correct planet," said the woman walking at Dinalt's shoulder.
Her robe was the same deep crimson as that of her master, and her voluminous blonde hair cascaded over it all the way down to her waist.
"According to my charts, the primary settlement is less than 3 kilometres away from where we put down. We should be there within the hour," she added sternly.
Tryphena Brand was a recent addition to Dinalt's band of operatives, and though she and Chow clashed regularly, he often had to stay his tongue by dint of her rank of junior interrogator. He considered a retort, but thought better of it, turning instead to the Xenos. The short, hairy figure, loping along beside him, had picked up a heavy coating of snow, the white powder almost completely obscuring the orange-brown fur beneath.
"It's all right for you, KC," Chow said. "You got your own fur coat. Chumps like me and Lyle here."
He gestured to the slight figure of the astropath, rigidly staggering along in front of them.
"We just gotta fight back the cold with warm thoughts. Ain't that right, boy?"
The robed youth struggled on for several seconds longer, muttering to himself under his breath, before, by way of delayed reaction, he started as if shocked by the mention of his own name, and stopped to face Chow and the Jacquero.
"Stars burning brightly, the sun upon your cheeks, the balefire of eternal damnation,"
Lyle said in a monotone devoid of emotion.
"Thoughts, warm thoughts,"
he added, before turning back and carrying on through the tundra, still muttering under his breath. Most astropaths were eccentric in some way as a result of their soul binding and contact with the immaterium, but Lyle was something else altogether. Dinalt had once shared with Chow that he believed Lyle's condition predated his voyage on the Black Ship and was the likely root of his vast astropathic abilities. The boy had been able to send messages over large intergalactic distances without the aid of relay choirs, and was far too talented to spend his servitude to the God Emperor stuck in an administratum facility transmitting troop deployments or munitions shipping orders. His incorporation into Dinalt's retinue had not been without difficulties. A blind man who couldn't stand the touch of another human being the least of them. But his usefulness far outweighed the downsides. Chow was about to say something else to the Jacquero when, from out of the whiteout, he caught sight of a spear tip reflecting the planet's dim sun as it flew through the air.
"Down! Down! Down!" Chow yelled,
drawing the pair of bolt pistols holstered at his hips. Dinalt and Brand dropped to one knee, reaching for their own weapons, while KC bounded over on all fours to take up a position behind them. Lyle simply threw himself forwards into the snow, burying himself into the wet powder and covering his head with both arms. The first of the lumbering gun servitors reacted too slowly, and the spear took him square in the forehead, sliding through his lobotomized brain before emerging through the back of his skull. For a few confused seconds, it turned this way and that, synaptic signals failing to be sent to its twin heavy bolters, before crashing lifelessly to the ground. The other servitor manipulated the weapons slung at its side in place of arms, attempting to find a targeting solution through the white static, but just as it had succeeded in filtering out friendly forces from hostiles, another spear flashed through the air and struck it in the back of the head. It fell to its knees, confused at its plight, before a third spear flew out of the blizzard and struck the servitor in the chest, killing it instantly.
"They've got us surrounded,"
Dinout said, pointing his plasma pistol at the vague outlines resolving through the falling snow. As if to acknowledge him, a dozen spear-carrying figures stepped forward, weapons pointed at the Inquisitor and his companions' throats.
"Want me to take them down, Chief? We'll probably lose Lyle and the monkey, but I'm pretty sure I can kill them all before they get you, me and Blondie."
The Jokero shot Chow a glance and narrowed his eyes.
"Nothing personal, little man," he added.
The Jokero exhaled a sharp breath, flapping his ample lips.
"Stay your hand, Chow. If they'd wanted to kill us, they would have done so by now," the Inquisitor ordered. "Everybody, put your weapons on the ground."
Dinout allowed his plasma pistol to drop, its weight causing it to sink below the surface of the snow. Brand and Chow did likewise. Lyle lay there, continuing to mutter to himself. Their assailants, a mixture of both men and women, were clad in thick, dirty furs and long, unkempt hair stuck to their faces, wet from the blizzard. Totemic skulls of small animals hung from leather cords around the necks of some, while others wore larger skulls like shoulder pads adorning the animal hides. One particularly brutal-looking savage, a mass of tight, corded muscle and matted black body hair, had what looked suspiciously like human skulls in place of where his kinsman had animal remains. It was this one who spoke, his deep, guttural drawl sounding not dissimilar to the dark tongue of some cults Dinault had previously encountered.
"Can you understand him, Brand?" he asked.
"A little. All primitive human dialects seem to evolve along similar lines, at least during the formative stages. He asked us if we came from the sky."
It had been little more than a year since Tryphena Brand had become part of Dinault's retinue, her former master having died in his attempt to wipe out an ancient chaos cult. But in that time, not only had her combat and investigative skills proved useful, but also her background in linguistics. A military orphan, Brand had been placed in the care of the Scholar Progenium while still an infant, before finding herself inducted into the Order of the Fractured Cipher, a dialogus branch of the Adeptus Sororitas. Almost as soon as she had taken her final vows, she found herself as part of an Inquisitor's retinue, distinguishing herself to such a degree that even before she was out of her teens, her former master had taken her under his wing as an inquisitorial apprentice. But her former master was dead, as would she be if she couldn't talk herself out of this situation. Dropping her weapon, she slowly rose to her feet, the tips of half a dozen spears pointed at her throat as she did so. She cleared her throat and emitted a string of harsh, phlegmy syllables. The dark-haired tribesman's eyes went wide as soon as she'd finished speaking, and he issued several angry grunts, echoed by the others of his tribe. Spears jabbed forward threateningly, forcing Brand to her knees again.
"What on terror did you say to them to get them so enraged?" Dinout said, his piercing gaze locking with that of his junior interrogator.
"I told them to put down their weapons and surrender," she said. "We are agents of the Most Holy Ordos, and our authority here is sacrosanct."
Dinout looked ready to castigate Brand when Chow said,
"If you'll allow me..."
He slowly got to his feet and raised both hands, palms out in supplication.
"What I think the lady was trying to say is, can you take us to whoever's running things around here?"
Brand's assertion that they were close to the primary settlement proved to be an accurate one, and they were soon being led through a massive stone archway that opened out into a snow-covered square, surrounded on all sides by buildings made from the same material as the gate. Braziers burned outside many of the structures, and the smell of roasting meat and human waste hung on the thin, cold air. Their captors had treated the Inquisitor and his cohort well, going so far as supplying the obviously ailing Lyle with extra furs, but the spears remained constantly aimed at their hearts and throats. They passed through the square towards a dominating structure at the far end, the town's inhabitants spilling from doorways to stare in awe at the captives. Most stood a respectful distance back from them, simply content to witness the coming of the strangers. But others, prostrated themselves before them. One woman went so far as to run out into the street and try to place a necklace of rat skulls around Lyle's neck, which led to a nervy few minutes of the youth shouting at the top of his lungs while Chow and Brand attempted to calm him down. As they got closer to the large building and visibility improved, Dinald saw that it was far more ostentatious than he'd first realized. The stone of its walls was smoother and of a better quality than the other dwellings, and crude statues of warriors lined the wide steps that led up to a set of well-crafted wood and steel doors. As they reached the foot of the steps, the high doors swung inwards, and the tribesmen, who had been keeping them prisoner, gestured with their spears for them to ascend. All five of them did so, as did the dark-haired warrior, who they assumed to be the leader, spear in one hand, an animal-hide sack holding the prisoner's weapons in the other. A tribeswoman greeted them at the top, and after a brief conversation with the armed warrior, he handed over the sack of weapons and received a jangling leather pouch in exchange. Without giving any of his former captives a second glance, he went back down the steps two at a time, counting out his payment.
"Come with me,"
the woman said with an effort, as if her vocal cords were not used to making those sounds. Her furs were cut and arranged as if to form a dress, and jewellery hung at her neck and earlobes.
"You speak low Gothic,"
Brand ventured, but all she got in response was a blank look, followed by a sweep of the woman's arm, urging them to move on. Another set of doors opened at their approach to reveal a high-ceilinged throne room, the air greasy with the smoke from tallow candles set into recesses in the walls and a vast wooden chandelier overhead. The flickering light caught upon jewel-encrusted vases and goblets sat atop smoothly polished tables and finely embroidered tapestries that covered immense sections of the wall. The other decor paled into insignificance when the five of them caught sight of the elaborate throne upon a raised marble dais, upon which sat Zula Degrees, the near ebony of her skin, in stark contrast to the alabaster flesh of the two handmaidens who attended her.
"I have to admit, Master Dinald,"
Zula said, a playful smile forming on her lips,
"I was expecting you a little sooner."
"Do you have the knife?" he responded, ignoring her quip.
"2 years I've been stuck here, and all you—"
"Do you still have the knife?"
he asked again, threat evident in his tone of voice. Zula sighed and parted the furs covering her midriff to reveal the crude wooden hilt of the knife.
"It hasn't left my side the entire time I've been here." "We have the knife, Master. Now we should execute her for heresy and continue with our mission," said Brand, her face expressionless. "We haven't been introduced, and already you're threatening to kill me. I can see we're going to be the best of friends."
The playful grin disappeared from her lips.
"She's wearing the symbols of the Ordo. Does that mean you've already replaced me, Master?"
"Junior Interrogator Brand was formerly under the tutelage of Inquisitor Morven until he died in the service of the Ordo. I had oath to him to take Brand as my charge and complete her training should anything happen to him. And he oathed likewise to watch over you should I fall in service to the God Emperor." He turned to give Brand an admonishing look. "And she won't be executing anybody for heresy. Not today, at least."
"But, Master, she rules over these people like an empress. Even the throne she sits upon is golden. This sedition cannot go unpunished."
Brand's cheek started to flush with anger.
"I rule over these people because it was the best way to ensure the safety of the knife. When I fell from the sky, and believe me, this thing isn't accurate, and I did literally fall from the sky, I could have tried to take on an entire world of spear-wielding savages, or I could have taken the route of winning hearts and minds and make the aggressors my guardians and, by default, guardians of the knife."
Her smile returned.
"Seems the latter worked out pretty well, not just for me, but for you too. If I hadn't offered a vast reward for the safe capture of any other visitors from the sky, then it would have been your corpses that Urk brought before me. Remember that, Brand? You already owe me your life."
The junior interrogator bristled at this. Zula's smile broke into a grin.
"Chow, Lyle, KC, I didn't expect to see any of you again."
KC's lips pulled back, and he gave a toothy grin that mirrored Zula's. Lyle stopped muttering under his breath at the mention of his name and gave Zula a puzzled look with his dead eyes as if he was trying to remember who the owner of the voice was. Chow let out a booming laugh.
Zula de Grease, you always did land on your feet, he said.
Some of your luck must have rubbed off on me. How long have you been in the Master's service now? 5, 6 years?
7 years and counting.
She paused, weighing up the choice of her next words. I take it that the others are all dead?
Chow nodded solemnly.
Minerva?
She didn't make it off Falshea. Fire Warrior took her head off with a pulse rifle from 100 meters away, Chow said.
Beric?
Taken down by the same cult that did for Inquisitor Morven. It happened during the operation to rescue the junior interrogator here.
Zula cast Brand a dark look, adding another mark to her mental tally.
Sivan Sen?
Went down fighting, but you wouldn't have expected anything less from him. Held off a pack of warp beasts while we made off with that damned book.
Book? What book?
Zula said.
There will be time to discuss all that later, just as there will be time to honor those who laid down their lives in service to the Blessed Ordo and the Golden Throne, the Inquisitor said. We've already tarried too long in our search for you, Zula, and we must make with all haste for Pythos and pray that we are not too late.
Pythos? You've discovered its location.
The book has already given up many secrets and should give up many more on our journey. Now, gather anything you may need and be ready to head out for the shuttle as soon as day breaks.
Zula slid down from the throne and gracefully traversed the smooth stone floor to the door of her quarters. Opening it, she lingered on the threshold.
Bran, she said.
The junior interrogator turned to face Zula. Through the half-open door, Bran could see an enormous bed covered in fine furs and fine jewellery suspended from ornately crafted wooden stands and other trappings of frippery.
Yes,
Bran replied.
You were wrong about me.
Oh,
Bran said, surprised.
How was I wrong?
I'm not their empress.
Zula's grin returned.
I'm their goddess,
she added, before entering her quarters and shutting the door behind her. Brand turned to Dinalt, her cheeks flushing an even deeper shade of crimson than previously. Before she could speak, Dinalt had opened a channel on the vox link on the forearm of his sleeve.
Dinalt to Terran Fury. Are you receiving me? Over.
Loud and clear, my lord,
replied a male voice.
We have recovered our cargo, and will be returning aboard imminently.
Very good, my lord. We shall prepare the landing bay.
And captain?
Yes, lord.
As soon as the shuttle is clear of the planet's atmosphere, shower the surface with virus bombs.